Previously on Dyslexics Untied.
Nearly all philosophers of the 20th century argue that thinking can only be possible and occur with language. My questions are, how can I effectively explain to people examples of spatial visual thinking? 2, can you do an episode about spatial visual thinking? What it's like for dyslexics, how it does or doesn't use words for you, etc.
I was about to say, let's have them on.
Going to face this way.
Yeah.
Which is really different.
So we have a guest here.
It feels awkward. I feel like I should be like this.
Because we normally try to not look at the cameras
right.
at all.
And that's so, we're breaking tradition.
Well, you still don't have to look at the camera. You just...
I'm looking
John
towards the camera.
Well, look at that camera.
You really dramatically look up sort of thing and then...
Yeah, you should... Oh, what would have been cool, John, if you want... Maybe if you got off camera and walked on and like, oh, hey, guys, I didn't... There you go.
Dramatic. And John Henry. Hey! And John Henry's here. Hey, John.
Hey. I can see you there. Yeah.
That's exactly...
Wow.
That is exactly what I wanted.
What a coincidence. We just happened to be recording a podcast today.
Yeah.
And you're on the video. That's wonderful.
On this laptop.
So why don't you give, I know we talked about you a little bit on our last recording. Why don't you give a little bit of background on yourself, if you don't mind, and kind of go through that, and then we can get into it.
Yeah. So I'm John Henry. So we're joking. It's a real name somehow.
Yeah.
But yeah, also dyslexic. I found the podcast like the middle of 2020 during COVID. But I'm in grad school right now. I'm studying a PhD in philosophy, and so I do the kind of philosophy I do is called phenomenology. So I've been working a lot in like the phenomenology of dyslexia, which is basically just like the actual experience itself of dyslexia versus like the neuroscience of dyslexia how do you teach dyslexic stories? Just like, what's the actual experience of being dyslexic? Because phenomenology is just the philosophy of experience itself, sort of deal.
That's fascinating. What I wanted to talk about today. I told Sean that when he got here.
Yeah.
I was like, I wanted to talk about what it's actually like in the day to day.
Yeah.
So that's perfect.
Perfect. Yeah. I mean, it's perfect. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So when did I just wanted to ask him.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. So how and when did you go about knowing that you were dyslexic? Because I know Sean and I have
a
background on that.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's such a good question. Yeah. Like, so I like lucked out in many respects because it's like my dad found out he was just like, so he's super dyslexic. It's running the family, you know. But he's like a big dyslexic activist. So he was like always like kind of, it was on his radar when
That's
I was
awesome.
Like a toddler. And then like my preschool teacher, she also is dyslexic. And so, So like I was like 3 and she was like watching me like do super well on puzzles and I could do all this like kind of spatial visual stuff really well. But like, she'd show me a letter, like it couldn't pick
it
up.
Anymore,
you know, she's like, you know, so even at 3, like my preschool teacher's like, you probably want to get him tests when he's like old enough to get tests. So I think I got diagnosed.
Wow, and where'd you grow up, John? What?
I grew up in Baltimore, which is it's like a hotbed for like dyslexic schools. There's like 2 or 3.
Oh, wow.
It's like education just for dyslexics.
That's
so it's
fascinating.
Like, yeah. So there's just like lots of like, just like where I grew up, I got super lucky and my parents, my teachers, all that. Yeah, actually, like, funnily enough, my preschool teacher is now my adopted grandmother because we just like adopted each other as families. So it's
that's awesome.
Here all the time, you know. But yeah, so I got diagnosed at like 5 and like went to a school just
sooner than I did.
So I mean, sorry, I don't know if this is a weird question, but like,
when did
you grow up? So we know like the decade or something.
Oh, yeah. I was born in 92. So I grew up.
Okay. You know, so he's,
classic millennial.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was born in 93.
Yeah, so I was born in 71.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it shows that, it's definitely.
I was reading your paper, like, it wasn't until 1986 that they stopped calling dyslexic people mentally retarded.
Yes, unspecified mental retardation.
86. So, so
well, we talked about
you
that.
You guys were born at a good time, about 6 years after that, when it could have trickled down.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's amazing.
And I had plenty of teachers still describe what I went through as that word.
Yeah.
Because
it didn't trickle down.
It
takes time for like papers and ideas to kind of go down.
I had plenty of teachers that said like, you're just retarded.
Right.
And it's like, oh,
huh.
Didn't know what that, don't even know what that really means, you know? But I wasn't really diagnosed probably until late middle school. So probably like seventh or eighth grade. And I was really lucky as well. Yeah. Cause my mom was a teacher. So she was in the system, but just, we were in, you know, rural Kentucky ish.
Yeah.
So it just, you know, talk about trickle down for that type of stuff.
I'm thinking about it. It's around like 92, 93 when my aunt asked me if I was dyslexic.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, she was a high school teacher. So she had.
Interesting. So she had heard the word at some point.
The word dyslexia. And she's like, Sean, you might be dyslexic. Like, I'm reading your paper. You're really smart, but you can't spell.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
I'm spelling bad.
And it's great that you had. I have a similar experience that, like, that having the advocate is so huge, right? That your dad.
So huge.
And then you have to be an advocate for yourself, which is what Sean always gives credit to me for. And now it's just. Because that's what we went through. That's kind of how we became friends, was through like talking about dyslexia and
frustrations,
advocating for myself in going through my undergrad program, right? Barely making it out of high school. And then it's just, it's still so fascinating that it has that stigma. So what is it? This is the, what we always start with from the very beginning when we first started this podcast. What do you, how do you define dyslexia?
Oh man. I love this question. Yeah, it's actually so, I love, because it's like, I'm actually, it's, you know, end of the term, I'm writing term papers right now.
Oh,
so
perfect.
Yeah, writing a term paper on this, actually. And like, I think what's like really interesting is like medically, if you look at like how it's medically defined, it's like, it's, we would say it's like defined by negation. It's defined through like what it's not. Like it's the inability to read. It's And so there's nothing we could say that like what it is, or there's like no like attributes or traits we could give to dyslexia medically. And like, when you look at like, I mean, I haven't researched a ton of the research medically, but like I've seen some, and it's always focused on like difficulty reading, or you can't read, or this or that. But so the thing that's like weird there is like, okay, you get diagnosed medically as dyslexic, you can't read. You then get like a legal status to help you like get tracked through the education system, get extra time on tasks and stuff. And then
your accommodations or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah. And then ideally you actually get those accommodations. You have teachers that will actually do it. And then ideally you learn to read and you're remediated. Right. But the thing that's like wild there is like, that means that like all three of us are no longer dyslexic medically or legally. Like
I never thought about it that way.
Like, because we know how to read, so we don't have that diagnostic. And
we've
like,
been remediated, so we're...
Right.
Yeah. The thing is, like, you see what I'm saying? We're
so
out of that
you can
framework.
Read, you're not dyslexic, according to the medical terminology.
Right, but no dyslexic would ever say...
Yeah, which that's...
Yeah, it's we like, totally
yeah, it's a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, right, yeah. Like, we all still feel dyslexic. We are experiencing our
dyslexic. When have I ever not bleeped it out?
Yeah, you always do.
I'll bleep myself out.
Yeah, you always do. It's fine. Yeah, sorry about that, John.
But it's exactly, it's like, we're still dyslexic. We feel dyslexic. Yep. We talk about our dyslexia. It's still there. So, like, I think that, like, first of all, like, the medical definition is just not working in many respects, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like, so I think what I would say is, like, it's hard to define dyslexia because it's hard to say whether it's like a bunch of different kinds of neurodiversity that just gets sort of pigeonholed into like, well, we all have difficulty reading.
That's what I used to call
types.
It. I used to call it like the trash can of like learning disabilities.
Yeah, I remember you said that on a podcast.
You just wipe it all off and you're like,
if you can't read, you're probably dyslexic.
Yeah, you're probably dyslexic. Let's put it all in this one spot and call it dyslexia.
Yeah. I think that like, you know, it's like, it's anecdotal, it's speculative, so I don't know for sure. But, like, I think I would say dyslexia always has, like, a tendency towards, like, spatial visual thinking or visual thinking on some level. And I think there's, like, super interesting, like, part of this paper I'm writing is, like, all these different kinds of research have shown that, like, dyslexics have way stronger peripheral vision than most people.
Really?
And they have, like, weaker
vocal
vision.
Yeah, I think we saw that on...
Yeah. So I think there's, like, some kind of connection between, like, stronger peripheral vision. We like tend to think more visually because of that, but it's also like why we maybe can't read as easily. Like, it's not just the eyes, it's like the whole neuro eye connection and all that. But yeah, I think there's like a sort of
I used to get I think I've talked about this before, like a colored see-through sheet that they used to put over top of my book.
Totally.
And I think that's part of what you're talking about, so you'd focus more in on what you're reading.
Yeah.
Also, there was another piece where I'd get headaches if I tried to read on white sheets of paper.
And my grandmother had that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't really know the science behind it, but it was twofold. They put those, like, they were back then, I mean, they were just dividers, right? Like the color dividers.
Okay.
And they put a see-through colored one on top of the sheet, and then you'd read through it.
Yeah.
And that was supposed to, and it did. It helped you focus
on
what you're reading. Yeah. It's,
I just use my pen. Like, I'm always like,
right.
Like tracking with my
pen.
Well,
that'd be a really
cool episode. No, totally.
We just went through some of the stuff I used to do.
Yeah.
When, for, and that was called visual therapy. Is what it was, but it was in association with after a diagnosis of dyslexia.
Huh.
Yeah.
So, John, I remember like the question that you asked us online, and I think Lucas or Bridget asked us, was how, I think it was like you wanted more kind of ammunition to kind of throw in those discussions.
Yeah, exactly.
Of like, hey, language and thinking are not tied together. Like,
exactly, you can think
without language. And so did you come up with some idea? I know I came up with a few things that came to mind.
Yep.
So just want to talk about this. One of the things, maybe it's in my field, because I studied a lot of computers and writing and multiple intelligences and things like that. So I don't know if that's something that's in your field that you can like reference.
Not directly, but I'd love to research that.
Yeah, it's called multiple intelligence theory.
Okay. Yeah.
So I think there's 7 intelligences: verbal, visual, logical, bodily, musical, interpersonal, and intrapersonal. Yeah. So that might be a good way to pull from. Because I'm reading your paper. I read your paper, Habits of the Mind, Thinking About Thinking, which do you have this online anywhere? Like, this is something that is pretty interesting. If you want to nerd out
copies
about
out.
Dyslexia, like this would be like fun.
Sure.
Yeah, we'd love to have some way to reference. We can talk about that offline as well. We'd love to have some way to reference your work.
Yeah.
In some
fashion. I mean, that would be super cool. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Just starting out. So like.
But yeah, I think, okay, on page 6, you talk about the preferred mode of thought, which is one of the theorists. What was it? Daniel Tammet?
Yeah. He's like an autistic savant. He's super, super interesting.
Yeah. And so he talks about like his preferred mode of thought, like he knows English. But that's not really his preferred mode of thought. And I thought that was pretty interesting, especially if you think about multiple intelligence theory, where you even referenced Einstein. Einstein was like, I go into this German word.
Do you know what the word was? Starts with a G?
Gedankenwelt. Yeah.
Gedankenwelt.
Gedankenwelt. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
The thinking place or something like that. Velt.
World.
World. So the thinking world. Yeah. It was really interesting. And so Einstein comes up with these really cool ideas, and then he tries to explain it using words.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was like, that was really interesting. And you referenced something about how you were teaching this idea in a physics class?
Yeah, so I used to be a physics teacher before I went to grad school. Yeah, I loved it. I mean, it was...
Well, and that got to fit your brain so well.
Yeah.
Right? 'Cause,
I mean, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, not to take any of Sean's thunder. Sean was talking earlier when he just got here, and he was explaining a story, and when he was explaining it, he was saying he had to do something very, very quickly. He had to give a presentation very quickly without preparation, to no fault of his own. But he took his mind and he like threw it out in front of him, and he was like, boom, boom, boom. Like, there's my research. There's my pieces. Right.
Exactly.
And that's when I started reading your stuff, I was like, that's exactly what you're talking about with the space.
Exactly. Physics
was probably so cool.
It's so much fun, and it's like, it's super intuitive, you know what I mean? And like, as I would tell like students when I was teaching, it's like, well, we're all like, we all learn our like native language, but actually like we know physics at the same time that we know like language. Like, we've got to learn to walk. Like, you're figuring out how to live in the physical world, and like, this is like so intuitive to us. Like, we all know physics intuitively from being babies, basically, you know, but like, we can abstract further, just like you can abstract with words, you know. But like, the other thing that was really interesting is like, when you look at Einstein specifically, it's like you see this like visual thinker thinking visually, and like people that think only in words, I would find a lot of like people that would say they only think in words, they would find it really hard to understand Einstein, because it's like, you got to see several things at once and how they're interacting and compare this perspective from that perspective.
Because there's so much spatial depth to what's being
said. Yeah.
You only see, if you're looking at it just through words or English, you know, however you want to describe it, you're only seeing that first layer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And you're like, I don't get it, because I can't see past that. I can't see into these other connections, these other pieces. 'Cause that's how that's so cool to hear somebody else talk about that, especially in your field and relate it to physics, because I absolutely love physics. Like, as a very mediocre physics person, like, I'm obsessed with it. I think it's so cool. I can never get into the math piece of it, right?
Yeah, no, it's like the math is hard for me too. It's just like the concepts are super interesting.
But the concepts are amazing, and I feel like they make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah,
like, I feel like exactly. I get, like, when you watch the videos, you see this, like, I get what you're saying, right? I couldn't, not that I'm like a professor or something, but I always felt like I could gravitate, no pun intended, towards right? Yeah, yeah.
Anyway,
so that's awesome. And I was thinking about this too. I teach graphic design, one of the things that I teach. And so we use Gestalt theory a lot, you know, the unification theory.
Yeah.
You can design things so that they automatically make sense to people. Like, when you look at a page, you know how things are structured, where to look for what information, like, it's all organized for you. And a lot of that is based on physics as well. Like, a lot of the graphic design theory is based on that. So, like, well, like, when you, we talked about this in a past episode. So when you have more data or there's more instances occurring, it gets darker.
Yes.
Because that's a property of physics, right? And so the fewer instances, the lighter it is. So taking all those laws of physics and applying them into graphic design was something that I thought was pretty interesting. But
that's wild.
It's kind of off topic, but still.
So I think that's exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's 100%.
So there were a couple things that I wanted to throw out there, and you can gun them down or not, because I'm not like, I'm not talking in your group, so I don't know what people are going to gravitate towards or not. But you have multiple intelligence theory, but there are other things too that really kind of made me think. So, like, coffee drinkers or bourbon drinkers or Psalms, like, they have a way of talking about flavoring. So you could taste something and enjoy it or not enjoy it, but you might not be able to explain why. And I tell my students that with, like, graphic design, like, I'm going to teach you graphic design theory so that when you look at something, you don't say, I don't like it. You could say, hey,
yes,
there's this white space is really making the page pull off to the side. There's a lot of there's no balance here, or it's too balanced. It looks boring. Like, you need to know those kind of things. So having those, that terminology in graphic design or in wine tasting or bourbon tasting, that's something that you acquire when you already know that you like it or don't like it. And we'd say this like a gut instinct, right?
Yep. Totally, right.
And there's a lot of theory now that says we do think with our gut. Like, the gut is a very important part of our thought process. And I don't think my gut is speaking a language.
Yep.
I'm just like a hunch, right?
So I had a similar thing as what came up in your question. I had the same thing come up when I went to dinner with some friends. I was showing them touchpoint math. So touchpoint math is the way you learned math, like, back in like the 90s and early 2000s.
If you have dyslexia,
it's like a visual math, right? Where you count on
a
number.
So I
was leaving a tip at this restaurant.
Yeah.
And the people, my friends, were like, what the heck are you doing? You know, like, what are you doing on the receipt? And I was like, oh, I just count the points in space, and that's how I add the numbers. And they were like, oh, okay, so you memorized where those points are on the number. And I said, no, I didn't. I just know where they are. And they were like, so you memorized.
I see them in my head.
And I was like, no, I just see them in my head. I know where they are. They're like, that's memorization. And I was like, no, it isn't.
Yeah.
So my advice or piece that I would add to maybe some of your conversations would be, believe people.
That
their minds are different, right? Don't just put your lens, and this is in so many facets of life.
You talk about this in this paper.
Yes, exactly.
That's exactly what you're arguing for. Like, stop trying to shoehorn everybody.
Yep. Exactly.
Oh, right. I'm sorry.
One type of intelligence.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. And it comes up every day in my conversations, especially in my job. It comes up all the time because I work with so many different types of brains just from in the level that I am in business now. Yeah. It happens all the time. And I have to and people just can't get it. Because of the way that they look at the world.
Exactly.
It's literally the physics that they experience. Yeah. I'm saying the physics I experience are different. Like, that's how much it is, right? Because
like
the
synapses in your brain firing differently.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Does that make sense? So I understand what the reservation is. Because they're like, no, there's no way. Like, that's not how I, it's like me saying that this is blue. Like, this is blue back here. Yeah. And they're like, no, it isn't. Like, that's not how I see it.
Right.
Right. That's how I feel like, and I don't know what it's like to not be dyslexic, but I feel like that's how I can be explaining it to not yeah, no, exactly. People.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and John will say this too, as a fellow academic, like you're hanging out with a lot of people who think verbally.
Exactly. Yeah.
PhDs do not call a lot of, you know, body movement people, you know, like that's,
it's not in their daily routine. So,
yeah. Right. And visual is something that I just kind of squeaked in on. Like, visual thinking and visual learning and visual like pattern building is something that's very recent. Like it wasn't something that was even studied. I remember early on in my academic career that my mentors telling me, don't publish in that journal. It's too pretty.
Interesting. Like the visuals are just too good, basically.
Yeah, it's too well designed. You want to get in the really boring ones. Those are the ones that count for tenure.
Prestigious.
That was literally something someone told me. Like, really?
Totally. No, it's completely believable too.
Yeah, and it's different today, but only in certain fields. So you have you're hanging out with a bunch of people who do really, really well. Thank you very much. Reading and saying things. That's the way they learn. And then they just cannot figure out that someone else does it differently. That's the problem we have with accommodations, because we have these people like, I don't understand why I have to do this for a student. And you're like, because that's the way the student learns.
Yep.
You hear it.
Every day I ran
into. And they're like, oh, well, I did just fine.
Yeah, I just studied a lot and worked really hard.
Like,
and it
was always, you're just lazy.
It's always work that's hard. Your brain.
It's the good enough mentality where it's like,
it worked for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, and like, I've always spoke well of, honestly, the education system.
Totally get it.
I think it does
for
most people, right?
Except by weeding out the dyslexic brain, you're really, that's what the British are now arguing. We have to throw the British in here. The British are saying,
it's contractual.
Always. We have to get more dyslexic people through this track. Like, we got to get them in.
Yep.
It's like the British head of intelligence, like for cybersecurity, says like, we need like dyslexics working in cybersecurity because they can visualize the computer, like
because they can speak more of that language.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
But, and the neurodiversity in general, like they're looking at all spectrums, right? And dyslexic is part of that.
No, I mean, I totally agree. I think the other thing that's like also like, as I've thought about this more, I think really important to also remember and highlight is also like I am totally on board with like the multiple intelligences. And I think all of this is exactly right. But I think the other thing that's like, it's not a but, a thing with that is, what's always happened historically, I think from the British, also the French, it's also in the United States, is like, not only can we not imagine people thinking differently, but we're going to like just say that like on the outside, the way they behave is not the way we behave. We're going to say that they're less intelligent.
Yes.
We're going to attach intelligence to like human value, you know? And like, this is the thing that I think is also like a big problem. It's like, I want us to recognize multiple intelligences, but I don't want to just like map on the same thing of like, whoever's smarter is better than anyone else. So it's like, now like you've got some kind of other intelligence, therefore you're better than someone else. And someone who might just coincidentally not be smart in any of these intelligences, they're not less than anyone else.
Yeah.
They're still as much a human being that like still has as much to offer society as anyone who's smart, you know? And
that's
like,
a great point.
I think that's like the thing is like, it's so easy to just sort of recreate the exact same logics of like smart people are better. And then we're going to get like systems. Like, I mean, the reason the British like to do this, because it fits really well with imperialism. Like, let's take over parts of the world and tell these people they're inferior to us, you know? Like, and like,
it makes it a lot easier to do what they did.
Yeah. You know, and like, you can see this in a lot of really cool post-colonial philosophies. Like, the way colonial powers use their language as a means of showing they're more intelligent and smarter is always there. But it's like so f-ed up, and it's like, I think all of this is exactly right, but it's also important to remember like how it's also like part of the dyslexic experience, just like for dyslexic specifically, is like we're also used to being told we're dumb, you know, like, and like even think about like the word dumb, that actually is just like, that word comes from deaf people, and so it's
to
like
describe
you don't have language, therefore you're not intelligent, you know, like you can't hear the word, so you're not smart. And like, it's the exact same thing that we experience as dyslexics as a larger cultural logic, you know?
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
Let's take a cut.
I think we're are we at time?
We're over time, but yeah, let's take a cut.
This was for great.
This one's been great.
Absolutely fantastic,
yeah,
John.
It's great to have you on.
Oh, cool. Yeah. No, this is super fun. Yeah, I might get
some. Also, you did a really good job in case you've ever been in this experience before. Yeah, that was really good. I'm gonna use the restroom. But if we wanna do another one and focus more on I was gonna talk about more of the like stories of experience. If we want to go into that, or we can go into a different topic. It's up to you.
We could talk about that. Yeah. I love the academic stuff, but I don't know like how many of our podcasts.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, that's going to really interest. But if
we get more into what phenomenology.
That's what really I wanted to get like into is more phenomenology because I think we talk like, about that a lot without using the word. So it'd be great totally. To cool. dive into that a little bit. Let's take like 5 minutes.
Yeah,
just because I always have to go to the bathroom, and then
are we bringing to another episode or
okay,
well, cool with that, John.
Well, we'll see you next week, and
I'm crawling on the table. I'm out of here. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us on Dyslexics Untied. New episodes every Saturday on Spotify and YouTube. Also, catch us on TikTok.